Here is the week in Congressman John Faso news. Votes he took, positions he espoused, and protest rallies and town halls that he attended or not.
Matthew Hamilton is reporting at Capitol Confidential that U.S. Representative John Faso has reported a cash balance of $269,000 in his campaign account as of the first quarter of 2017. According to his filings with the Federal Election Commission, Faso raised more than $276,000 and spent $110,000 between January and March 31st. Among Faso's biggest financial supporters, State Republican Chairman Ed Cox, investors Paul Singer and Daniel Sinner, and Steward Shop Chairman William Drake. You can read that full story at Capital Confidential, a Times Union blog. Congress is on spring break. But New York Representative John Faso, the Republican from Tenderhook, is still not holding traditional town meetings or even announcing where he's going. On Friday, April 21st, he does have an event, though it costs money to get in. Anyone willing to spend $1,574.49 can sit at a VIP table with Faso, Sheriff Butch Anderson, and State Senator Terrence Murphy at O'Connor's Public House in Pauling at 6 Broad Street in Pauling at 6:30 p.m. on April the 21st. Paul Kirby reported in the Daily Freeman that U.S. Representative John Faso will conduct a live stream interview on Wednesday, April 19th with the paper's staff beginning at 9 a.m. Questions for the first-term Republican can be sent in advance to pkirby at freemanonline.com. Faso is advocating policies to increase opportunity for families and supports reforms to boost the economy and improve the quality of life for New Yorkers, according to his website. Faso says he has championed ideas to combat the heroin epidemic, treat Lyme disease, and increase health insurance coverage options for patients and small businesses. He has been pointed to the House Budget, Transportation and Infrastructure, and Agricultural Committees. As a member of the Budget Committee, he is among those who voted yes to advance the troubled Republican health care bill. Faso has run afoul of many 19th Congressional District constituents for failing to hold traditional in-person town hall meetings since he joined Congress in January. He also refuses to publish his schedule online, as his predecessor Chris Gibson did.
John Faso had a question and answer session with the Daily Freeman newspaper on Wednesday, April 19th. WGXC broadcast it live also. Here's John Faso asking a question about why he's not holding town hall meetings like his predecessors, Chris Gibson and Scott Murphy, did.
Questions?
Oh, you got some?
Yeah. Okay. There was one recurring one. This happened before. We had it submitted, and we had it also live coming in all sorts of shades. But it basically comes down to a little bit of the elephant in the room, which is, and you've answered this, and I'm going to have to ask you again. The issue keeps coming up that you haven't met with your constituents in a full-blown town hall type meeting. You know, like, you know, in Kingston we had a meeting where you didn't attend. It had 700 people, and they all wanted you to go there. And you have said that you don't want to go there just to, you know, have people yelling and stuff like that. But isn't that part of your job? Isn't that what you have to do?
No, I don't think so. I'm available to the public all the time. I meet with groups. I've met with literally dozens and dozens and dozens of groups of either small groups or individuals. I met with 40 medical providers at the Kingston Hospital recently. I met with six different groups down in Sullivan County 2 days ago. Meeting with different groups today. I'm attending events. I'm speaking places. I'm making myself available to newspapers for live interviews like this. I'm communicating all the time by phone and by mail and email with constituents. And I'm meeting them later this week around the district as well, the rest of the week. I had a live televised town hall the other night, and I hope to do another one more in the southern part of the district so that many more people can actually see, listen to what the question is, and hear an answer. And I think that's actually the most effective means of communicating with people. I've met with literally... I don't know how many meetings I've had, but it's definitely well into the hundreds in the 3 months I've been in office. So, you know, those folks had a meeting that they scheduled before they invited me. And then some report or some say that, oh, I didn't show up. Well, I didn't show up because I was scheduled somewhere else. But I, at the same time, don't believe that necessarily is the most effective means by which people can ask me questions and where I can respond. And if you look at some of these town halls around the country, I think that bears that out.
Right. I mean, and they would say that, well, I mean, the issue is not going away. They're still demanding that you, you know, come to the meeting. I mean, we're being accused right now of hiding, of helping you hide from your constituents.
That's just silly. You know, look, political opponents are going to say anything they want to say. And I've been around this process for a while. I engaged in six separate debates with my opponent when I ran last year. I've never been reluctant to state my views or engage with political opponents or with constituents or anyone that wants to ask me a question. I've meet with countless numbers of people in my district offices, in my offices in Washington, on the street, in the grocery store. I mean, I'm meeting with people all the time. So those are just fake accusations, and you just treat it for what it is. A lot of it is just partisan politics, frankly.
Representative John Faso answered questions from the Daily Freeman on Wednesday, April 19th, broadcast on WGXC2. Here's a question about the Pilgrim Pipeline for local Representative John Faso.
Patricia Barth asks, I'd like to ask Congressman Faso if he approves of the Pilgrim Pipeline.
I haven't seen anything in the proposal to warrant my support. And I think that it's a program where it's a proposal where there's a lot of controversy to it, a lot of local opposition to it. And I haven't seen any great benefit to our communities for it. So I have not supported the proposal.
And will continue to support it until...
Well, and if I have some great revelation that's comes forth that says this is something different, but everything I've seen indicates there's no reason to support it.
John Faso answered questions from the Daily Freeman on Wednesday, April 19th. Here's a question about Planned Parenthood funding.
This is a question from Ruth Levine about Planned Parenthood, but we wanted to expand on it a little bit.
Okay.
On Thursday, President Trump signed a repeal of a rule requiring states to distribute funds to health centers, even if they perform abortions. You voted against that rule.
Right.
But you describe yourself as pro-life. Could you elaborate your stance on abortion and Planned Parenthood funding?
Well, I voted against that rule because I thought that actually I read the rule. The rule could be used just as much against a Planned Parenthood as it could be used against a pro-life family planning counseling center, and depending on what state you're in. So I did vote against repeal of that rule. I thought it was unwise. But again, that rule was adopted in both. The repeal of the rule was adopted in both the House and the Senate, so my position did not prevail. On the whole funding of Medicaid funding that Planned Parenthood is able to access on behalf of people that show up who are Medicaid clients, I simply don't believe, even though I am on the pro-life side of the question, I've always believed in exceptions for the health of the mother, et cetera, or if there's a crime involved, such as rape. But my belief is that the issue of Medicaid funding should be treated separate and apart from the whole question of whether you support or oppose Planned Parenthood based on abortion. Because there are no federal dollars that go to pay for abortion. The state does it, but not federal dollars. This is the Hyde Amendment. It is in law. It has been an appropriation measure for over 40 years. So the...
It goes for other things that Planned Parenthood does,
correct.
Right?
That's correct. So they might do STD testing. They might be prescribing birth control. By the way, I've also co-sponsored legislation that would make birth control available over the counter, which we've had 40 years of experience in this regard, and there's no reason why birth control has to be through a doctor's prescription. It can be available. They have this Plan B over the counter. Why don't they have regular birth control over the counter? So I've co-sponsored a bill to do that. So, but the principle that I'm enunciating here is that if you're a licensed provider and you have a licensed facility and you have physicians or nurse practitioners or physician's assistants who are licensed providing a service, and you agree to accept Medicaid, and someone presents themselves as a Medicaid eligible person,
right,
and they're going in for an STD test under Medicaid, well, they should get paid. So it's really, it to me, it's a very basic issue of the fairness of the question. I know that this is engendered by the pro-choice, pro-life dispute, but I don't see it that way. I see it as something where they're providing necessary services for people who are eligible under Medicaid that has nothing to do with abortion.
And should be paid for.
And it should be paid for. Now, I actually voted for a Democratic motion within the Budget Committee to instruct that this language be taken out of the bill that would remove Planned Parenthood's eligibility. Let me tell you one other thing. If you're a hospital which performs abortions,
like Kingston Hospital,
and you accept Medicare and Medicaid money,
and they
you're not affected. So it's to me there's an inconsistency there. And look, my view is I believe strongly in the fidelity of the law. I believe strongly in due process, and I believe strongly in fairness. Now I am a fiscal conservative, for instance, and I'm a pro-life person, but at the same time I believe in fairness in how the laws are administered and executed. And I don't think singling out them in this regard, when all these other folks are similarly situated and they're not affected, I don't think that's fair. And so that's why I adopted that position. You know, some people in my political base don't like it, and some people on the other side who will never support me don't like it anyway. But the bottom line is that that's the position I've taken. I've tried to clearly articulate it. And I think it's a logical position, and it's one I'm sticking with.